You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
We chose this song on purpose, Don't You Forget About Me, because now you can't. He's got a building named after him soon. One of the most accomplished Kansas Cityans you can possibly imagine. A very humble man, very well-known man, and he would argue that the only reason they named the school after him is they ran out of people to name stuff after. Alvin Brooks joining us in studio. It is a pleasure and an honor, sir. Welcome.
Thank you so very much.
I should say welcome back.
Well, thank you, both of you. It's good to be with Dan and Parks.
It's been a long time. How did you first hear they were doing this? And we want to let everyone know this is in the Hickman Mills School District. This is long overdue. They call you a living legend, and they will be naming the new school that serves, I think, 6th to 8th graders, Alvin Brooks Middle School. You think ribbon cutting sometime in the spring or something to that effect?
Well, I serve on the board of Hickman Mills. My term is up in April, and I've enjoyed it's my second time around. But it was at the meeting in December. I was in the hospital bed, and I have 5 beautiful daughters. All 5 of them need to be committed, and they were angry with me. 2 in Kansas City, the other 3, Kennesaw, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, and Phoenix, and all of them were on the phone at the time. And so I had my grandson to get in on my laptop I had there, and they were hollering, and I had to put it on whatever you call it, and because they were hollering, get off the phone, you're in the hospital, but anyway, that's when it was brought up. But then a couple of Thursdays ago, our January meeting, it was affirmed. There are 7 members of the board, and I abstained, of course. It was, you know, it's an honor to have that happen, and there's nothing like our young people. Some people say that our young people are our future, but they're the now. They're making decisions now that many of us at their age didn't have to make. So I don't use that term. But it's just an honor to have a school named after me, have in the school, and certainly.
So you have worn so many hats over your many decades serving this town, from the police department to serving on the board to starting ad hoc against crime back in 1977, did you say?
1977.
You've worn so many hats.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Mayor Pro Tem, Kansas City of the Year, that every time I see you, I want to give you a hug, but I always go, I don't know what to call you because you have so many titles.
Well, they call me a number of names, but
none of which just referred you as.
Especially when I started the ad hoc group against crime, because that's when the crack cocaine craze came to Kansas City, and a group of black men, about 56 of us, under the umbrella of that group against crime, were closed crack houses. And the prosecutor couldn't do it. The government couldn't do it because they had to, first of all, get a warrant and then make the buy, then determine whether or not it was illicit drugs, and then go, you know. So we just go up and we knew who the people were because we had a hotline where people were calling in the address, and we had somebody go up, try to buy and this kind of thing. So we just go on a Saturday and we pick out a dozen or so. Larry Joyner was the police chief at the time. And I tell Larry, here's what we're going to need. Listen, those folks are okay. I said, that's all we want you to do. You just give us passage from one place to the other without someone stopping. We don't want you to protect it. So we borrowed a casket from one of the local black funeral homes and put it on the flatbed of my cousin's truck and drive it up in front of this house. And a couple of us would go up to the door and say, we know what you're doing here. This is Saturday. You shouldn't be here next Saturday. And every time we did that, and we only got one confrontation out of the over 300 that we closed. So that's what brought George H.W. Bush to Kansas City in January of 1990.
That's right.
And then Bill Bennett, the fall of that, and Bill Bennett called me and said, you think that ad hoc can host the president in January? I said, let me check. And
if you've forgotten, Mr. Brooks was named one of America's 1,000 points of light by George H.W. Bush in 1989.
Very honorable man, too. I very honorable person. I had a lot of conversation. And I told him one time when we were honored, there were 31 of us, and we went to Washington, and we were sworn in, and he spoke at the luncheon, as I recall, in someplace, and he got to me. He'd been to Kansas City. This was in March. He'd been here in January of 1990. And he was kind of bragging about Kansas City and putting me on a pedestal, which was embarrassing. But anyway, and he said, Al, you have anything to say? I said, yes, Mr. President, let me just say this. I know why you appointed me, because you run out of black Republicans. You got a kick out of that.
You're going to these crack houses in the 80s, and you said you went to 300. And
over 300.
Over 300.
We closed them.
I mean, you're dealing with the worst of the worst. Weren't you scared?
No. Here you look out there and you see 30, 40, 50 black men, and the kids would be on the street, the women would be on the street, we wouldn't let them. But only a couple of us, we knew what house it was. And some of them were run by Jamaicans, some of them were run by local African-American men or women.
With guns?
Well, we didn't go in, we just knocked on the door. And if they didn't, we just knocked long enough, they looked out and they saw the police, so then they came to, because police were out there just.
They
weren't to protect us or even go into the house. They were out there just to make sure we're the next stop, that we didn't have to stop at the stop sign, because there were about 20, 25 cars in a caravan. But only one day we'd have a confrontation. One day, it's interesting about this one, with one of the fellows, Calvin Neal, and they called him Big Tender, Timber, and he was a boxer, and then his Asif Bahauddin. They were the ones who did the chants and everything, and then up with dope, down with up with hope, down with dope, those kind of things. And so what would happen is that they would, we just go up to the house, but in this one confrontation, it was on Bell Fountain, in about the 6 to 800 block of Bell Fountain here in Kansas City, Missouri. And this fella challenged it. So Calvin, big fella, 240 pounds, you know, and this kind of, and so that Monday, I was supposed to speak at that neighborhood association. Well, when I walked in, it was at a church. The meeting was at a church. I walked in, and everybody started applauding. Well, that was okay. That was okay. And they said, "We're glad that Ad Hoc burned down the house." Well, I said, "No, we don't burn down any house, but somebody set the house." I mean, it wasn't anybody in our group. Set the house where this fellow was challenging us, set it fire.
That's one way to get him out of there.
But we had nothing. But I said, "We do not want credit for burning his house down because we didn't do it."
Mr. Brooks, every single time there's a new administration or a new police chief, and we have a recently new police chief, you know, people talk about why can't we, quote, fix the crime problem in Kansas City? And you have been here and been friends with and been partners with so many chiefs and mayors and city leaders. And I don't know that there's any city that's ever going to, quote, fix the crime problem. But what have you seen change over your many decades of service in the city? And where do you think we need to go to address the violent crime issue here?
I came on the police department, hit the streets in Kansas City September of 1954. And at that time, of course, black officers could only ride two districts, couldn't ride in white communities. Years before that, in the early 40s, if you were black officer, caught someone who's white, you couldn't arrest him. You had to wait until the white officer come to you. You could go to court and all like that, but it's that. So when I came on, that had passed, but we're still segregated in terms of where we could ride. But if you compare the 1950s and 60s with the 2000s, it's proliferation of guns that create the violence. We didn't have those kind of gangs. We had gangs, because I worked with teenage gangs back there, but they weren't ones who were killing each other. They weren't selling drugs. They had territorial, sometimes neighborhood. But so that was the major difference, the proliferation of guns, and now versus then. You very, very rarely heard anything about the Second Amendment. Second Amendment. And so I think is the personalities involved, younger now. When I came home, it was the end of the Mafia Pendergast days.
Yeah.
Okay? And so, in fact, two other black officers, myself, Bumpus and Bowie, they called us the three Bs, Bumpus, Brooks, and Bowie. And we decided to do something within the black community. We were young. I came on, it just turned 22. Bumpus was 22. He just went to the army and got out, and Bowie and I went to school together. So we started doing some things very, very, very unusual. We never violated anybody's rights. We never did anything that would cause it. But we did a lot of unethical kind of things. But I'm comparing that, what we did, into what you do now. I think now you have in Kansas City, for example, each year you can predict that of the homicides, regardless of the number, that 60 to 65% of them going to be black males. Now, you cannot tell me if 60 to 65% of white males are being killed in Kansas each year that somebody wouldn't do something about it, say something about it. But you don't hear anything about it unless some of us, and I'm the one who always brings it up, which means that something's going on if that's the case. If you look at those who are in prison, the courts, the justice system, you know, more than 50% of those in many of the prisons where you're in urban communities are of African American or Hispanic descent. So these kind of things, I think, when you talk about the 50s and the 60s and even the 70s, it was up until the 80s things began to change with the crack cocaine coming and Jamaicans came in and they we worked ad hoc work with the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Police Department and Rob Larson, who was Assistant U.S. Attorney, now a retired federal magistrate judge in senior status, sent all those folks to prison, or they went back to Jamaica or someplace, and it left a void because you had so many crack cocaine addicts at that time. So black men fell that void, and so there again you had a really interesting. So that it's an interesting period to study, but I think sometimes we have to really look at how we're preventing crime, and there are some various phases of that. The quick phase is that you deal with the situation as it is. The long-term phase is education. In most credible studies, it shows that where our young people even get a high school diploma are less likely to get pregnant or get somebody pregnant, get into gangs, get into drugs, get into guns. And so when you have in urban school districts where, for example, you have 100 black boys to be getting middle school, and by the time they graduate, only 50% of them are gone. So what's happening to that other 50%? They're out hustling and doing these kind of things. So I think the educational system is so important, and we got to make sure that everybody understands what's going on. I'm on the Hickman Middle School. 80% of our students are African American and 5 or 6% Hispanic. The rest of Caucasian, as well as from some of the other countries.
Mr. Brooks, let me jump in for just a second because we want to hear all these stories.
Yeah, because you have to go. See, because once I get going, man, you
like
got to stop.
You're like a marathon runner. We got to get to break. We're way late on the break. Alvin Brooks joining us in the studio, former member of the Board of Police Commissioners, former mayor pro tem, ad hoc group against crime, Hickman Mills school board member. So many hats, there's not a hat rack to hold them all. When we return here on Dana and Parks. I don't want to waste any more time. One of the most recognized names in Kansas City, Alvin Brooks, started out as a police officer in the mid-1950s, went on to be a part of Ad Hoc Group Against Crime, Board of Police Commissioners, Mayor Pro Tem under Kay Barnes, now finishing his term, and he's not running for re-election at the Hickman Mills School District.
That's right. This is it.
The new South Middle School they have just announced, which opened, I believe, this school year, serves 6th to 8th grade students, will be renamed the Alvin Brooks Middle School. And that has to make you feel good, Mr. Brooks, but that's not all.
It does. It makes you feel very good. Nothing like working with our children.
Tell me about Rockhurst.
Rockhurst University has Dr. Tom Curran, who was then president. When they called him in, they asked, Father, you're leaving, Father Tom. What do you want to leave as your legacy? And he said, I want a building on university, on a Rutgers University campus. I want it named after Alvin Brooks. It'd be the Alvin Brooks Center for Faith Justice. It's at 5400 Truce. It should be done and ribbon cutting sometime in May. Now, that's an honor also.
The Alvin Brooks Center for Faith Justice.
Yes. And the chapel that's attached to it, it would be the Maybe Chapel. And I had some concerns about that being attached to the building until I realized faith justice. So you have a chapel, which I hope will attract various faiths that could come and meditate there and worship there. That's my hope. But it's an honor also. It's an honor. It's an $8 million project, and they must have some money because they're building it.
I'm looking at the renderings now. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yes. And I assume it'll have the address 5401 Truce. It's east of Truce. It's on the east side of Truce, mm-hmm. because Truce has always been sort of like the Mason-Dixon line, you know, north-south, between the south and or east and the west. And that's, it is an honor, and you have to be humble with things like that. But you don't do what you do because you have buildings named after you or streets named after you or many accolades. You do it because you think it's the right thing to do.
The vision of the Brooks Center is to, quote, create a more just Kansas City through collaborative advancement of right relationship with God, with others, and with creation.
Yes.
What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, everything that I've done over these years of adult life, if it had not been for my family, wife in particular, Carol was the wind under my wings, and she and the rest is our faith. And I think those two together made me what I am, and what I am and what I hope to leave here. When the last act is and the curtain comes down, I hope that people will say, you know, he was a family person. He relied heavily on his family, particularly Carol. And he knew what family meant. But also, I think people in general. It bothers me when we have these differences because of race or religion or ancestry or gender and all that. It really bothers me because that's one of the things that early on, as a teenager, I had some differences with because of the way I was treated as a young black boy and growing up, and by the police. That's why people say, why have you joined the police department with all these things that they did to you and when you were growing up? But I was able to put that aside and not be angry and not strike back, not to say things that were painful, hurtful. And so it's kind of life. And I hope that I've passed that on at least to my children. We lost our son 23 years ago. But I hope my grandkids, who have had I have a good relationship with. Now, when it comes to great and great great, they're on their own.
Six children, 17 grandchildren, and you said after that you lose track of the number.
I lose track of that. I know it's close. It's near 70, and have
70 great grandchildren.
No, 70. Oh, 70 in terms of descendants of Carol and Alvin Brooks, and there are three pregnant this year. And I always say that they're just like rabbits. Okay. Rabbits breed every 29 to 35 days. They're just like rabbits. And the reason I know that is because my dad used to raise rabbits, and I had to make sure that after they were bred, that I had to count the days because the day was on there, a little deal that I made, such and such a month, such and such a day that year. And then because if you did, when the mother has the baby rabbits, if they weren't covered with straw, she'd eat them. So when I say 29, 35 days, look at the data. That's what it takes when
Alvin Brooks,
to give birth.
You are a gift. Thank you so much for your time. I cannot imagine a better, more humble servant to name both of those buildings after, and we are just so thrilled it is you.
Thank you. Good to be with both of you this afternoon. And to our listeners, if God says, continue to stay in prayer.
Thank you for coming in. It's been an honor and a privilege.
Thank you.
Alvin Brooks, so many titles, I'm not going to name them all because it'll take us to 4 o'clock. Sam Stevie III, Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks, here on KMBZ.
What an honor that was. Always good to see Mr. Brooks.
Well, he was still telling stories when I was taking him out to the front door.
Walking, living, legend of history and civic service. There's a video and a story in our stack. Scott has not yet seen the video because he was like, what is this about? I need your reaction in real time. We're going to play a little bit of it at some point. But it is one of those stories that I have never thought about this. And I know we've never talked about this in our now 14th year, day one. Local waste management employees narrowly avoided a dangerous situation on Wednesday when someone put something in their trash that did not belong there, and then they put the trash receptacles in the trash can, Scott, from the can to the garbage truck, and the garbage truck does what it does,
oh
which
my
is,
God.
I told
oh
you
my
to watch
God.
It. That's the sound of a
oxygen tank. Oh, that was the was them putting the fire out?
That was them trying to put the fire out after a massive explosion.
Oh, there it is.
We're going to post this on social. You have to see the video to understand this. So keep in mind, there are roller bins at the curb, And there happens to be a surveillance camera on the back of the garbage truck, which is how you can see this. One of the trash guys on the left grabs the roller bin, puts it in, and starts the compression, the compactor. The other trash guy on the right, servicing the right side of the street, then pulls the second trash bin. And before the compressor gets all the way down, he dumps the contents of that trash bin into the trash truck. Someone had placed an oxygen tank in their trash can.
He's lucky he's alive.
The entire thing blows to smithereens in seconds. And both of them are lucky they're alive, Scott, because it blasts up and out.
The debris field from all the trash that's already in the truck goes about, I would guess, 40 to 50 feet down the street.
Quoting here from the city manager, it sounded like a bomb went off. The explosion was so loud that it set off the city's gunshot notification system everywhere. It was chaos. There was trash everywhere. The tank was discovered. Listen to this word, Scott. Illegally placed in the garbage can in that 4,000 block of Elburn Avenue in Ohio. It is, quote, definitely illegal. It is definitely dangerous. This is something we definitely want not only the person who did this, but also all of our community members to be aware of. There are some things you are not allowed to throw away.
It was a big ass boom.
Yeah, it was.
Basically, anything that's large and pressurized, even things that are small and pressurized, there are proper ways to dispose of those items. But if they're small and pressurized, they're not going to create the massive explosion that this thing did. This was probably, it's like knee height.
Oh,
to kind of give you an example of the size of this tank.
Here's my question. We don't know, like maybe they were cleaning out this house, let's say, after someone passed away and they're getting rid of all of the medical debris.
Those things are not cheap.
What percentage of people do you think understand that not only are you not allowed to put an oxygen tank in the trash, but that it is illegal to do so? Because I'm going to be honest, in all of my 50 years, I ain't ever seen a story like this in the stack, ever. I know when you go to mail stuff, they say, make sure, are there any lithium batteries? Is it this? Is it something that's explosive? And you got to write that, you know, you got to sign your name at the United States Postal Service. It never would have occurred to me. It's common sense that you shouldn't put it in the trash, but it never would have occurred to me that that could lead to what we're seeing here.
Growing up, my grandmother had an oxygen tank that she took around everywhere that she went. Being the bored kid that I was, I often sat and read the labels on things. Isn't that exciting? And if I remember correctly, I do believe that had a warning label on the side of the tank that said, do not discard.
But how many people know that, Scott?
I would hope most mildly educated people. I mean, it's a highly flammable.
Yeah, but if you and the phones are already ringing, and I knew they would. If you are a trash truck operator, driver, like whatever, what are the other things that just as a community service we're going to be telling people?
You know what we throw away all the time that we're not allowed to throw away?
Please
paint,
tell me.
Paint.
Lithium ion batteries.
Of any kind?
Of any kind.
What about
of
regular
any
batteries?
Size. That one's iffy. If they're not charged, the alkaline in theory is not able to catch fire, in theory.
I love this. It says the local police department seeking information about the incident. Well, you know what trash can it came out of. Maybe because it's in 10 trillion pieces.
You know, one of the two houses, we don't know if it was the first one that was dumped in.
Which person has the 105-year-old person inside
that
likes to go to the casino on Sunday and probably smoke while they're doing it? Like, this is not going to be, you don't need Matlock coming in to figure out where this came from.
Well, I was just about to say, Dana, you're asking how many people know that you're not allowed to throw it away. I would say the same number of people that know you're not allowed to smoke next to it.
I was always told you shouldn't put paint in your trash can.
No, you take it off that I-35 place and you have to make an appointment and they're lovely. You absolutely cannot throw away paint, but not because it's going to explode.
Because it seeps into the water system.
It's hazardous. I cannot remember a story in all of my years that someone improperly disposed of something and it blew a trash truck to smithereens. Like, think about it, Scott. Obviously, fireworks, like that would be stupid to throw away.
But not necessarily flammable without an open flame.
What about even the little canisters you use, like for a Bunsen burner?
Here's something you shouldn't throw away: bullets.
Okay.
Not that anybody would, but
I'm talking estate sale, Scott. I'm not saying that's what happened here. But let's say someone passes away and you are just getting rid of everything, like you take all that trash out. I don't know that. I certainly don't think this was deliberate. I think this was someone that was like, maybe after a death, maybe after someone moves to a nursing home, let's get rid of all this stuff, like the toilet seat, walker, you know, all of the aging in place stuff. And they throw the oxygen tank in there, and then we got an 8-wig boom boom.
That more looked like a 9-wig boom boom to me.
Oh, I bet that trash truck guy needs a new pair of pants.
Well,
I would.
We had to heavily edit it.
One of the moms of one of the two trash guys said they're both doing fine.
Good God.
They both suffered hearing loss and cuts, but they're going to be okay. Now, the hearing loss, obviously, their hearing came back.
Huh?
But they did suffer temporary hearing loss.
Okay. What? I guarantee you no one knows this. Here's what you should not put in your trash because they could potentially explode when crushed by the trash compactor by your trash guy, okay? Mm-hmm. To Sam's point, lithium ion batteries. Yeah. Let's now add oxygen tanks and all other tanks that might contain pressurized air. Here's one. Aerosol cans.
Really? What are you supposed to do with those?
Not put them in the trash. Like hairspray?
Like Aquanet?
Well, I'm going to go further. What about Pam cooking spray? Like, we have to have this conversation. I had no idea you weren't supposed to do that. None.
I don't use a lot of Pam, but when I have and it's run out, I throw it in the trash.
Technically, any aerosol can, period. Any pressurized canister, period, you are not supposed to throw away.
And I'm telling you, ain't nobody knows that.
Let's go to Kyle in Spring Hill. 913-586-7798. Kyle, hello.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday.
Same to you.
So years ago when I was still a police officer, and Dana, I thought you might remember this because I think you were still at Channel 5 at the time. We had a trash truck explode in one of the Johnson County jurisdictions. And so we responded. They pointed which house they had just come from, and these folks had thrown away the components of their meth lab.
No.
Oh, yeah. And we served a search warrant on the house and uncovered quite the operation.
Oh, so they threw away the components of an old meth lab.
Right.
And then built a new one.
It wasn't that old if it exploded.
Yeah, they upgraded.
Kyle, thank you for the call. If you Google this, you will get results of trash trucks exploding.
Within the last year, I can't remember how recent it was, if it was within 3 months or 6 months or whatever. So I'm going to say within the last year, we had a story out of, I believe it was Minnesota, where the entire load of that trash truck caught fire. And thankfully, they noticed it and dumped the load in the middle of the street. But then you had a trash truck's worth of trash sitting in the middle of the street.
I do remember that.
And I believe it was a lithium ion battery on a hot day.
By the way, somebody writes in, they need to make it easier to dispose of things like paint, batteries, spray cans, and old medication.
I don't disagree.
I don't disagree with that either. I would have no idea. Obviously, I could Google it. But if I have an old can of paint, where am I supposed to take that?
Back in the day, it was just something we would learn before we purchased that thing. Do we not have, not to go all self-responsibility on you?
I don't know where to take it.
Two police officers were injured just a few weeks ago. A few weeks ago in December, and there's body camera footage of it showing a garbage truck exploding in Arlington Heights, Illinois.
913-586-7798, 586-7798. Don't forget, coming up right after 5 o'clock, it is Festivus Friday, the airing of the grievances. It is brought to you by Q39. Get your Q fix today, Q39KC.com. This just breaks my heart because I am convinced that this is the greatest Queen song of all time.
You've said it. You've said it again. And because you'll say it one more time.
Because I believe it. But the New York Post is out with a list of artists and the song that they hate the most that they made. And right here, Queen, Don't Stop Me Now.
Aw.
Lead guitarist Brian May did not appreciate that song when it was released in 1979. I didn't really take to it in the beginning. I didn't feel totally comfortable with what Freddie was singing at the time. I found it a little bit too flippant in view of the dangers of AIDS and stuff. Well, first of all, Brian, AIDS came out in the 80s, not in 1979. However, May noted, but as time went on, I began to realize that it gave people great joy. That is correct, sir. Lady Gaga is not a big fan of her hit, Telephone. Bruno Mars is not a fan of his song, The Lazy Song.
Oh, that is just a shame, because that is a fantastic song.
Pink doesn't like Don't Let Me Get Me. Lord doesn't like Royals.
Well, that's the reason we all know that name.
I've never seen a diamond in
the rough.
Led Zeppelin and the rest of the world is tired of Stairway to Heaven. Oasis doesn't like Wonderwall. Madonna?
They broke up.
Well, I think there's more reasons than that. Madonna doesn't like a Virgin. And Miley Cyrus is no fan of Party in the USA.
Yeah, neither am I. When we get back.
Well, we still have another.
Here were your clues. The Grain Valley Police Department, Taco Bell,
diarrhea,
and Joe Walsh. Those are your clues for the story coming up at 4 o'clock. I have reached out to the Grain Valley Police Department, and I said, and I quote, "Criming is not funny."
No.
Usually.
You will not make me wait for my Crunchwrap Supreme.
Is there someone, maybe the chief of police, I know it's a Friday, that could call into this very program and give us an update on the suspect they are looking for with respect to those three clues that I just gave you?
Okay. USA Today, Chuck Todd is leaving NBC News.
Man, I saw that after how many years?
20 years. The NBC chief political analyst, former Meet the Press moderator, announcing the news in a memo shared with staff earlier today. The exit comes amid broad shifts in the TV news landscape. Quoting here, "There is never a perfect time to leave a place that's been a professional home for so long. But I'm pretty excited about a few new projects that are on the cusp of going from pie in the sky to near reality." He teased a possible newsletter, a possible second act for TV journalists. By the way, CNN lost Jim Acosta this week. He was my favorite on that network.
Leaving.
He
didn't die.
No. They rearranged some of their show lineups, and he was not included in the rearranged show lineup.
I believe they offered him a slot in the midnight hour.
Are you kidding?
You said Acosta, right?
Jim Acosta, yeah.
Yeah, they offered him a 2-hour show starting at midnight.
So you want me to move from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. to midnight?
Midnight to 2 a.m. And that was their way of saying, we're not going to pay you out for the rest of your contract. You can break it if you'd like.
Huh.
Wow.
That's a
I could be wrong.
See,
there,
I
but
like
I'm pretty
him.
Sure that's how it went down.
I think he's very good. He was my favorite on CNN.
Not 9 a.m. good, apparently.
Apparently not. Costco is reportedly planning to hike pay for most of its U.S. workers to more than $30 an hour after union members threatened to strike.
Do I still get free samples?
I don't know. Costco is going to pay most of its workers $30 an hour or more. The retailer will boost pay for its top store employees over the next 3 years, increasing wages to $30.20 an hour in the first year and an extra dollar in each of the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. Costco's promised pay hike also includes an increase of 50 cents to $20 an hour for low-scale employees, according to the memo. Quoting here from the CEO, "With these changes, we believe our hourly wages and benefits will continue to far outpace others in the retail industry."
Well, so wait a minute. Who gets to make the 30?
It says here they're top-tier employees.
Oh, so not the person handing me my sample.
No.
Or most of the employees.
Top store employees will make $30.20. Low-scale employees, I don't know what that is, will make $20 an hour. That's $20 an hour. That's not bad.
When we get back, our dear friend Will Sterrett has sent us...
You mean wink?
An obituary for the specific person... And the specific reading for our listeners. And I'll tell you why. Okay. Every once in a while, there's an obit that's so good.
Yeah.
It has to be shared. For a life well lived, we will read that when we get back, as well as talk about crazy Grain Valley Taco Bell dude.
All right.
An update from the NTSB scheduled for, I believe, 4:30.
Yeah, are definitely standing by and monitoring that as well.
Festivus Friday coming your way at 5 o'clock here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.